bad tape if you look at the draw.
Mics are live.
Good morning, everyone. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is 10:01 a.m. on Wednesday, March 4th, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis. Also present with me are Commissioner Julie Fedorchek and Commissioner Randy Christman. So we do have a quorum. I don't really have any opening comments just because we have a long agenda. So Commissioner Fedorchek?
I'll skip the opening comments as well.
Commissioner Christman?
As will I, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
All right. We have 9 items on consent and the previous minutes. I move they be approved.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, moving into the regular agenda, I will start with my items. BK1, believing there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest in finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the Commission consolidate these cases for hearing under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-02-04-04 and issue a notice of consolidated hearing in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, Advance Prudence, Heskett 4, application case number PU-19-306. Montana Dakota Utilities Company 88 megawatt turbine, Heskett 4, public convenience and necessity, case number PU-19-307, and Montana Dakota Utilities Company deferred accounting, Lewis and Clark 1, Heskett 1 and 2 application, case number PU-19-317.
Second.
Okay, a consolidated hearing on the application for these cases is scheduled to begin on April 30th, 2020 at 2 p.m. Central Time. That would be here at the State Capitol on the 12th floor. And this goes back to an application that MDU filed on August 28th of 2019 for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct and own and operate in an 88-megawatt simple cycle combustion turbine referred to as Heskett 4. The primary need for Heskett 4 is to offset the retirement of 3 coal-fired power plants, the Heskett Unit 1, located near Mandan, Heskett Unit 2, also located near Mandan, and Lewis and Clark Unit 1, located near Sidney, Montana. MDU states that these coal-fired plants are no longer economical. There was also an application filed September 16th, 2019, for deferred accounting treatment of the costs related to the proposed retirement of those plants until the disposition of the next general electric rate increase. And again, this is to consolidate those and those 3 cases into one. I think it makes sense because we'll cover the same ground. And I will vote to approve.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I do have one question on the details of the notice. In scheduling this, I think staff made it pretty clear that it would be difficult to assume we will get done in one day, and that's why we're starting at 2 on one day so we can extend. And so the notice just says scheduled to begin on April 30th, and so I mean that is correct, but should it also mention something about expecting to extend into the next day that someone who might be interested in participating or monitoring this has a more clear picture of that this is just not a couple hour hearing on an afternoon?
I don't think it's unreasonable. I think, you know, we certainly could have brought that up earlier since this has been out. But
I think it's some staff could add. But if it's something that you just only do the opening date, I'm fine with it too. But
how do we normally do it, Steve?
If you would like to have that in the notice, I don't. Is the notice already out?
Okay.
mean, it's...
It's the second day, we don't go a second day. I guess it would...
Yeah, it's not a bad idea because it's highly likely we'll go into a second day. If not, you know, next to impossible to consolidate or to keep it within just the first afternoon.
Yeah, it could be a settlement, too.
I think it's a good question. Maybe it's something we... Well, discuss down the line.
I think we can sure approve this, and that's can be a staff adjustment
sure.
if necessary.
Okay.
Understood. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, next on my list, I move the commission that the commission issue a notice of opportunity of hearing in Northern State Power Company Advanced Prudence 98.9 Moore County Wind Facility application case number PU-19-310.
Second.
We have a public hearing that would be scheduled to begin on May 22nd, 2020 at 9 o'clock p.m. That would be Central Daylight Time here in the Commission Hearing Room on the 12th floor of the State Capitol. And this is related to an application that Northern States Power filed on August 30th, 2019, again for the facility mentioned, which consists of 43 2.3 megawatt turbine generators. And the company is looking to move from a power purchase agreement for this facility that they currently have in place to purchasing the facility. Just some quick details. It's currently owned by a division of NextEra. It is actually called the FPL Energy, Moore County LLC. And NSP did enter into a power purchase agreement with them on November of 2005. It's a 20-year term, would expire December 2026. And, of course, there will be more information that we'll talk about as a part of, you know, whether or not this is considered a reasonable request. So I've got more detail, but I'll just leave it at that for now.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, and my final item, I move the commission adopt the order in Public Service Commission, Northern States Power Company Pipeline Safety Enforcement, case number GS-19-385.
Second.
Okay, this is related to an incident that occurred on January 4th of 2019. It was a Friday evening. And I have the order. I didn't put as many notes on, so I'm going to test my memory on this. But it happened at Riverview Place. It's a 24-apartment multi-living unit in Fargo, North Dakota, and I believe the 5300 block of 12th Street South. And what happened was there are two violations in play that we're looking at. One alleges the service regulator and relief valves were not located where the gas from vents could not escape freely from any opening into the building as required by Title 49 of the Code of Federal Regulations. And that probable violation has a proposed civil penalty of $10,000. Probable violation number two alleges that NSP customer service piping and fittings were not protected from atmospheric corrosion as required, again, by Title 49, the Code of Federal Regulations. And for those who are very detailed, that's Part 192, Section 192.479. And I did not have that memorized. So that violation has a penalty attached to it of $2,000. Again, this occurred January 4th, 2019, and as a result of issuing this probable violation, NSP did not contest the allegations. So as a result, the commission would be receiving payment from NSP of $12,000 as to conclude this particular case, what happened was the gas was leaking. Again, wasn't vented properly. It did make its way into a mechanical room on the facility or as a part of the facility. There was combustion within that mechanical room. Four apartments were damaged as a result. The residents were evacuated at the time. And then also related to the corrosion protection, the atmospheric corrosion, it's essentially having protective coatings on the piping, which would inhibit and prevent rusting of those pipes. So there are some other circumstances that could have caused this, but it could have been an incredibly serious situation and led to not only injury but death at the same time. And you do read about these incidents around the country. So it's a very serious matter. The company acknowledged that it is, in fact, a serious matter. And as a part of what they do, when you think of the number of multi-unit dwellings that are in the state of North Dakota, we have two gas pipeline inspectors and gas system inspectors. So we can't get to all of them. But as a part of operating these facilities, bringing gas to them, the company is required to self-inspect. NSP does self-inspect beyond what the national requirements are, which are every 3 years, within every three-year period, with a grace period of 3 months. So within 39 months, NSP inspects every 12 months and then also has a grace period that they implement internally of 3 months. So they're doing it annually versus every 3 years is the long and short of it. So they far exceed the federal requirements. And unfortunately, though, this incident still occurred. So I support the fine given the gravity of the situation, what could have happened as a result of the leaking gas.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I'll just want to say kudos to our team here in their work on this effort. It was a serious situation. And this is a good opportunity for the public to think about these things as well and understand what's in place for the safety of this natural gas infrastructure. Because natural gas is a wonderful, it's an efficient and affordable heating source for home use. It's great for cooking and other household applications and industrial services. And many of our communities have natural gas service to the homes and throughout the community. However, it's also a really powerful product. It's highly regulated, and it needs to be handled carefully. And so I really appreciate that beyond the fine that's included in this order, there were some compliance measures required by our staff with the companies to go out and relook at what their procedures are for this, make sure they're compliant with all the federal regulations, and to retrain some staff on some of these areas. So those components should help assure the public that between the company and ourselves, we're doing as much as possible to ensure the safety of the system that everybody in these communities depends on.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, and that concludes my portfolio, Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Okay, I have a number of items here, all of them somewhat unique, so we'll get started. First, I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement in Brady Wind LLC, Brady Wind Energy Center, Starr County siting application case number PU-15-690, and in Brady Wind LLC, Brady 2 Wind Energy Center, Henninger and Stark case number PU-16-042.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. This really relates to the deadline that the wind farms that were permitted after June 6th of 2016 were required to meet a deadline of December 31st of 2019 for installing the light mitigating technology. The Brady 1 and 2 facilities missed that deadline by 2 days, And there's been some back and forth with our staff regarding that. We had discussions about this matter, you know, while it was kind of happening, and decided at the time that we weren't going to determine what we would do as a result of these fines until we, or as a result of them missing these deadlines, until we got all the facts and an explanation from the company of the circumstances. And then our staff kind of negotiated with them and came up with a consent order. The original staff consent order calls for assessing a civil penalty of $5,000 payable to the Public Service Commission for Brady 1 and $5,000 for Brady 2. So a total of $10,000 for those two facilities for their failure to meet that deadline. This is an agreement that the company and our staff reached. In reviewing this, I actually I appreciate the staff's work on this and the company's commitment to this and recognition that this was a failure to meet something that everybody was anticipating and excited to have happen. But the company did file an affidavit from their vice president of Brady Wind and outlined several mitigating factors that really caused the company to fail to meet that December 31st deadline. And I think a couple of those are noteworthy. First of all, the company realized a four-month delay in receiving the radar units that are necessary to operate the system, and this was from the sole FAA-approved ADLS vendor at the time. So there was one vendor. That vendor anticipated to deliver the radar in August of 2019 and actually didn't deliver it until December of 19th of 2019. So that obviously left a very limited window in which to complete the installation of the system. So that's the first major item. The second big mitigating factor is the fact that Brady Wind, at the recommendation of its vendor, elected to create a redundant communications path to provide a secondary means of ensuring the turbine communication system was operating. This was a move that was taken on December 31st during the testing phase. Their affidavit David states that the system was up and running on December 31st, but the vendor recommended adding this redundant communication service to ensure that all the communication to all the towers was effective. It was an additional safety measure, and the company elected to do that, even though it meant that they would miss the deadline. So I looked at the timeline that was included in the company's affidavit to see if I felt that they actually got about the business of making the deadline in a timely manner. And based on the timeline they provided, I feel that they did. They started in July of 2018, when the vendor was first approved by the FAA to provide this system. They negotiated a contract with them then. They got their plan approved for the ADLS by the FAA at these facilities in January of 2019. And they started construction on the ADLS in July of 2019. So, but for the delay caused by the vendor and those added safety measures, I feel that they probably were on track to meet the deadline. And so I can't say that there was a whole lot of negligence on their part early on in the process that suggested they didn't take the deadline seriously. So for those reasons, I am recommending and have included a revised order here to assess them of a civil penalty of $1,000 per facility. So $1,000 for Brady 1 and $1,000 for Brady 2. And this would then apply similarly to the next case as well that's on the agenda. So again, I want to just close by saying there's two things. I think that we need to recognize the fact that this is new technology, and there was only one vendor that was available when the company started working on this to provide this system. So anytime you're doing incorporating new technology, there's going to be unknowns. And I think that based on the timeline outlined by the company, they did allocate a decent amount of time to try to get this up and running by the deadline, and just experience delays that I don't think they necessarily could have anticipated. And secondly, I really appreciate them stepping back at the late hours, even when they were under a lot of pressure from us, quite honestly, to meet that deadline. And they put safety first. And I really appreciate that too in this case. And especially where you've got a new technology, I feel that it's more important to have successful implementation of the new technology 2 days later than jeopardize the technology entirely by implementing it on time, but with potential safety shortcomings that could jeopardize the credibility of the technology as a whole. So for those reasons, I'm recommending a decreased fine over what was negotiated by the staff and the company.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I will just say that I don't really quarrel with any of the points that were just made, but during my time here, most of the penalties that we've issued have, I would had say, almost all, in fact, have had to do with one-call type violations. And there have been times when I've had concerns about when there were consent agreements about the amounts levied. And in either all or at least most of the time, even the explanations were helpful. Sometimes I still thought it might have been a little too high or a little too low. But for the most part, I have deferred to our staff who works with these things with the various industries and tries to maintain some consistency and that sort of thing. And so in light of the fact that a settlement was actually agreed to by the company of a higher amount, I'm a little concerned that we're reducing it this far. I'm not going to just vote no and then not have anything left. But I do think that this is a pretty big departure from what even the company had agreed to. And so I just want to point out that that does concern me.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Randy, because I did fail to bring up a third point, and that is consistency with other consent agreements on siting. So I've been talking with Jack, and he's kept track of the other siting-related consent agreements. And there have been three of them that he's aware of in the last decade or so. And two of them were on other wind facilities. And they were so $10,000 for Tatanka and $60,000 for Meadowlark. Both of those infractions were substantially more serious in nature. And I think that, comparatively, this compared to what those infractions were would not have been consistent in applying our similar enforcement tool or levying a similar fine for the seriousness of the infractions. So, and then the third one was the Code Access Pipeline, which we're all familiar with in terms of some of their construction issues and the settlement that was reached on them for tree and shrub mitigation, which was, there was a substantial number of locations, and that it wasn't a fine, but the amount of work that they did and the extra trees that they planted, et cetera, was, quite a significant amount of money. And again, I think those infractions are, there was disagreement about, whether they admitted or didn't, but what we viewed as infractions were, I think, substantially more serious than what we're looking at here with these delays. So I feel that this lower fine is more consistent with the types of fines we've levied on other similar or other citing related cases. Sorry, a lot of words, Brian.
Is there any further discussion?
Yes. I have just a few things to say. This was a late change in terms of reducing the amount. It certainly got my attention because I would share the same concerns that it's not adequate in terms of not for the reasons that the company was delayed in implementing the ADLS. That I understand, but for me, I felt there was a lack of communication with the commission. And when a company is not on track to meet any deadline, it's very important that they realize the burden falls on them if they are going to miss a date and to appropriately notify the commission so we're not left guessing as to where they're at. And again, the reasoning is sound, and there was one that wasn't put in place on a timely basis that did communicate. It wasn't, I don't believe this one, but another one did communicate in advance that they were having an issue getting some equipment shipped across from, I think, Europe, I believe is where it was hung up. But so that would just be my something I would like to emphasize to all companies. If you're not going to meet a deadline or meet a requirement, you need to let us know in advance of that not occurring, not after the fact. And that, again, was one of the disappointments in this, not the reasoning, but the communication.
I agree that communication is important, and I think that at least on the Oliver Wind project, I was in contact with the company, well, about all three of these, and I know they were in contact with Jack expecting to meet the deadline, and I expected that they would meet it in October. At one point, they sent us a letter to that effect, so... I think in these cases, there was still a belief by the company that they would meet the deadline, and they testified to that in the affidavit as well. So that might explain why we didn't hear that they weren't going to until December 31st. But I agree, the GAC communication is a key piece to all of our enforcement efforts and compliance efforts.
Ducks in a row. So the motion would be on the order presented, which would be with the reduced fines. If another commissioner would like to go back to the original order, that would require a motion to that effect. Does anyone wish to make such a motion? Sensing none, is there any further discussion? So we will move to a vote. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, signify by saying nay. The motion is approved, and the order as presented will be final.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. I won't go through all the background like I did. The same set of circumstances applies to this next case, and the same approach was taken to modifying the order. So I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement in Oliver Wind 3 LLC, Oliver 3 Wind Energy Center, Oliver Morton Siting Application Case Number PU-16-123.
Second.
So this, like I said, the same circumstances applied. The affidavit from the company was very similar. The difference here is that the penalty is proposed at $1,500 versus $7,500, which was in the consent agreement, because the date was, it was 3 days, not 2 days.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
And I'll just say the consent agreement was not just an offer that was tendered. It was something that the company had agreed to. I have my same concerns, but enough said.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you. Okay, next item. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Russo Wind Partners, LLC, Russo Wind Project, Ward in McLean County, citing application case number PU-19-028.
Second.
On January 21st of 2019, Russo Wind Partners filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility for a wind energy conversion facility to be located in Ward and McLean counties of North Dakota. Too much talking. On June 17th, a public hearing of 2019, a public hearing was scheduled and held in Minot on this project. On October 11th of 2019, Russo Wind filed a supplement to late filed exhibit number 51. With accompanying late file exhibit numbers 51C, Minot Air Force Base email and late file exhibit 51D, Capital Airspace Group memorandum, and supplement to late file exhibit number 59, with accompanying late file exhibit 59A, Power Systems Engineering, Inc. memorandum. On November 7th, Commission issued a notice of opportunity for a hearing, providing until December 6th of 2019 for comments and requests for hearing regarding the aircraft lighting system to be used at the project and regarding the options for interconnection of the wind generation facility to the electric power grid. No requests for hearings were received as a result of that notice of opportunity for hearing. So, getting through some of the facts of this. At the time of the application, the commercial operation of the project was anticipated to begin by the end of 2020. The project was planned to be constructed pursuant to National Electric Safety Code requirements, and the estimated total cost of the project is $250 to $280 million. The proposed project will take up approximately 16,200 acres of land in Ward County, and the project will consist of up to 47 wind turbines that have a nameplate capacity of up to 205 megawatts. The turbine nameplate capacities currently under consideration range from 2.3 megawatts to 4.8 megawatts. The proposed project layout is designed to accommodate any of the turbine models under consideration at most turbine locations. As currently proposed, the project would use a combination of at least two turbine models. There's a number of studies that conducted for this project. They performed evaluation for soils, land use, wetlands, water bodies, trees and shrubs, protected species, and critical habitats. They conducted environmental studies of the project area, including avian point count surveys, eagle point count surveys, and aerial raptor nest surveys, whooping crane mitigation habitat analysis, sharp-tailed grouse lek surveys, acoustic bat monitoring, northern long-eared bat mist nesting surveys, Dakota skipper habitat evaluation, and grassland assessments. Desktop and pedestrian cultural resource surveys were conducted, and the Turtle Mountain Chippewa participated in the pedestrian surveys. Russo Wind conducted sound analysis for the project and shadow flicker analysis, and they sent a scoping package to 29 local, state, and federal agencies and entities. In terms of exclusion and avoidance area impacts, there are six archaeological sites that remain unevaluated for listing on the National Register of Historic Places identified, these areas must be excluded from the designated site. Two U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service waterfowl production areas are located within the project area. These areas must be excluded from the designated site of these two U.S. Fish and Wildlife waterfowl production areas. No known active eagle nests are present within the project area. Whooping crane mitigation habitat found potential habitat and migration areas within the project area, but also found that the project does not offer higher quality habitat than the reference areas. The project will avoid direct impacts to known grouse lecks and has sited project facilities at least 1/2 mile from active grouse lecks. Potential northern long-eared bat calls were recorded during acoustic bat surveys, but follow-up missed nesting surveys identified no northern long-eared bats. No Dakota skippers were observed during the surveys. There are two intercontinental ballistic missile facility areas that are exclusion areas within the project area. These areas must be excluded from the designated site. Let's see. In terms of avoidance areas, wetlands are present in the project area. Both U.S. Fish and Wildlife and North Dakota Game and Fish recommended avoidance of wetland impacts. No turbines are sighted in U.S. ACE jurisdictional or non-jurisdictional wetlands or U.S. Fish and Wildlife wetland easement basins. Russo Wind sound analysis demonstrates that the sound levels for the project will comply with the Commission's avoidance area requirement. The sound levels within 100 feet of inhabited residence or community building not exceed 50 dBA unless a waiver is obtained. In terms of selection criteria, both U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and North Dakota Game and Fish recommended avoidance of grassland impacts. The project facilities will not be located in unbroken grasslands, and the project avoids U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service grassland easements. Let's see here. In a January 31st, 2019 letter, the North Dakota Aeronautics Commission noted concerns regarding the proximity of a turbine to a private airstrip. Russo Wind removed that identified turbine from the project layout. The shadow flicker analysis indicates that the levels will be below 30 hours at all but four participating residents, and Russo Wind obtained a waiver from those four residences. They've obtained a special use permit from Ward County and Brillion Township for the project. In the course of the hearing, Liuna stated it takes no position on Russo Wind's application, but requested that the commission require the hiring of local workers and consider imposing a construction employment reporting requirement. The commission fully considered Liuna's request and finds the request is sufficiently covered by the requirements of the certification or is otherwise not necessary for the commission's decision. Measures to minimize impact. All project turbines are located at least 2,018 feet from currently occupied residences of non-participating landowners. Russo Wind obtained determinations of no hazard from the FAA on the final layout of turbines. And there was a lot of give and take back and forth with the Department of Defense and the Minot Air Force Base, so I'll summarize some of that. On June 6th, the office, so shortly before our hearing, the Office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense sent a letter to Russo Wind raising concerns over an adverse impact on helicopter flight missions, missile launch operations, and weather radar operations conducted by the Air Force. At the hearing, Russo Wind testified that it had committed to engaging in the formal mitigation response team process to coordinate with the Department of Defense and the Minot Air Force Base to reach a resolution on this. Following the hearing, Russo Wind participated in the mitigation response team, and that process agreed to remove 5 turbine locations to address Minot Air Force Base's concerns. Then, regarding the ALDS, the Air Force cited safety and operational concerns with the installation of aircraft detection lighting system near the existing nuclear facilities and indicated a standard lighting system should be installed on the project. Number of other mitigation factors here. Russo Wind will comply with the commission's decommissioning rules, including filing a decommissioning plan with the commission prior to commencement of operation of the project and performing decommissioning in accordance with the applicable rules and regulations. So with that, this was a long process with a lot of different bumps along the road and curveballs that were thrown in the midst of all of the considerations. But in the end, I think that we've got an order in front of us that I think effectively mitigates impacts, assures that there's minimal impact on this project. And with the final condition in the order that requires Russo Wind to install light mitigating technology and place it in its service at the project as soon as possible and in consultation with the commission after a lighting plan using this technology is authorized by the FAA. This requirement requires that Russo Wind shall inform the commission monthly of its efforts to obtain an approved lighting plan using light mitigating technology and shall notify the commission in writing when FAA authorization has been obtained. Russo Wind shall notify the commission in writing when construction of light mitigating technology has commenced and when the light mitigating technology system is functioning. So I know that we all want to see that light mitigating technology used as soon as possible on all possible wind facilities in our state. In the case of this project, I think that was the company's plans all along, and late in the game, it became evident from the Air Force's concerns that the existing light mitigating technology that's available today doesn't work well with in addressing the concerns that the Air Force has raised. That does not mean that future technology won't be available for this project. And so based on that fact and the fact that there's still some significant steps that this project needs to take to get an interconnection agreement, so I think the construction is going to be delayed on this project. There, it may well be that a light mitigating technology system is available by the time it's constructed. It might not be, though. And the fact that we had that, had a public notice out to the community offering, announcing that the light mitigating technology might not be used on this project, and there was no concerns expressed to our office and no request for a rehearing on this project, I feel like that's one measure to assure that we, you know, did our part to make sure that the public knew about this and could express concerns. And I feel like this is in keeping with the approach that the legislature envisioned in discussions about incorporating light mitigating technology moving forward. I feel that it was clear in those discussions that the FAA would be consulted and listened to, and their preference on what lighting system ultimately is incorporated had to be recognized. So for those reasons, I feel like this is a good approach on this project.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, a couple things, and I start with maybe the least important, but I just don't want to forget about it. The very last, number 13 of the orders, had to do with that reporting on future options for light mitigation. I think that, you know, the numbers we've heard throughout the time when we've discussed these, I think these light mitigation systems do a world of good for other people around the state. And so I think they're an important and good deal, but let's not fool ourselves. They're not cheap either. It's an expensive thing. A lot of people operating in a competitive environment don't add things that they don't have to. And so, you know, I would expect I think the life expectancy, at least most of the wind farms that we site talk about 25 years. Now they talk about extending them. This will be around a long time, and I think there's a pretty good chance they will never submit an application that will be approved, and thus then they don't have to add anything. There's never going to be a hammer over them again. So my bottom line is on this. I think monthly reporting is excessive. In 25 years, that's going to be 300 filings if they never submit something that is approvable. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to vote for this, not because of that, but for other reasons I'll get into. So I'm not inclined to make the motion to amend that, but I think annual filings would be more than plenty. So if it passes, I just throw that out. Mm-hmm. On to what I think is more important issues. First of all, kind of commend Russo Wind on a couple of things. Working with the Minot Air Force Base and removing, I think it was 4 of their turbine sites plus 1 alternate site, you know, was certainly a good faith effort. The one that our North Dakota Aeronautics had expressed concern about for a private airstrip out there, they removed, and they avoided the unbroken grasslands, which is a really important thing to North Dakota's environmental agencies that consult with us. So kudos to them on that. Where my concern really lies, though, is on the wording of the law. And you had mentioned what the legislature envisioned, and I'm not going to even disagree with you on what they probably envisioned, allowing us some latitude, because I don't know what they were envisioning. There's a lot more legislators than the ones that spoke up in a committee. They might have been envisioning different things. I do know what they wrote. And they wrote that for wind farms sited after that June date of 2016, they must be equipped with a functioning light mitigation technology system. As I look through this section of law, which is not hundreds of pages, it's not a real long section of law on siting, there are places where the legislature has allowed flexibility. There's exclusion areas where, for the most part, you just can't build there. Then there's avoidance areas where you can't build there unless there's no reasonable alternative. In this section, they provide for power and pipelines not to be within 500 feet of a residence unless the inhabitant issues a waiver. Provide an option there. With wind farms, 3 times the height of the residence is an exclusion area, but again, they provided for unless the owner agrees. There's a part about our procedures and time schedule, but then they put in there that the commission may waive them in certain instances. There's a requirement that we have hearings, and this is having to do more with power lines and pipelines, but it sometimes can be wind farms that get into 2 different counties, that a hearing must be in each county. But then they provide for that the commission may hold a consolidated hearing. Probably the most concerning one is in this very subsection, there's a section 2 on these facilities cited after June of 2016. The next subsection is for the facilities before 2016. It sets a later implementation date, but then at the end of the essentially same language with just different timing of their siting and then the different implementation date, on that subsection, they added another sentence that after public hearing, the commission may grant an extension of time based on technical or economic feasibility considerations. So on those ones that were built before they passed the law, they provided us an option. And as I read it, the ability for extension is pretty much open-ended. But to me, it's pretty clear they wrote here that for things cited subsequently, they wanted these in place. And I'm not going to bring a motion here right now to deny this. I'm going to vote against it, and typically we do that because these things can't be sitting here forever. And there are also there's also language in here on us making timely decisions as well. And so I'm not going to present a motion to deny at this time. If I would prevail and we vote this down, I guess the reason I'm not doing the motion deny, I'd like to allow the company some time to consider potentially amending their application. It was never answered, at least to my satisfaction, whether it's a limited number of these turbines that prevented the FAA from approving a light mitigation system. Could 1 or 10 or 20 or some number of them get it, that they're far enough away? I don't know the answer to that. And so that's a lot of why I would like to leave this open. If they can communicate with our staff and we could hold it in abeyance for some period of time. And if that's not an option for them, if I prevail that this is denied, at some point we'll have to bring a motion to deny too, if it's not something they can choose to work on an alternate plan. But so that's my thoughts on it. I just think regardless of what the legislature envisioned, to me the language is pretty clear here. One other point I want to bring up. If we move into this, and I don't know how serious of a concern this is, but if we move into just assuming what the legislature envisioned and make the determination that when there's a requirement, if the company can't meet it, then what? Does that mean they can't build, or does that mean, well, they can't meet it, so they just don't have to? And so I don't know that subsequent applications are going to presume then that, for instance, something within too close of a distance to another residence or property owner, if they can't get the waiver, then does that mean it's okay to build there? They tried, but they just can't get it. Or any number of our requirements, it seems to me if there's not the exclusion built in, then they need to mean what they say. And I wonder about those other exclusions, too, if we go the route of approving this. So those are my concerns and my intention to vote to deny.
Is there any further discussion?
Okay. My turn, and I'm sure just because of how these work from an order in terms of who speaks when. Just as a part of, we all work independently of one another. We work with the same staff members. We probably might get the same advice if we ask the same questions. But we're independent. Walking into these types of votes, I might have an inkling or a fairly good idea of who may be supporting, who may not be, based on informal hearings, work sessions that we might have. But it's important that we continue to do what we're doing and arriving at our own vote, voting stance on a particular case based on how we actually see it ourselves personally. And that's clearly a case here in hearing my colleagues, and it would be the same for myself. I have concerns with the order in that. I believe the order is speculative in terms of what we anticipate the legislature will do in the upcoming session. And I say that because the way statute is currently written, there is a two-element test. You must, and it uses the word must, have ADLS in place, and that ADLS must be approved by the FAA. It's not an either-or test the way the law is written. And to me, we can talk about a legislative intent, but I think that should be reserved for instances where wording is ambiguous. The wording is not ambiguous in current statute, in my opinion. I think it's very clear. And the intent was to darken North Dakota skies at night and to eliminate visual pollution related to blinking red lights. That was clearly legislative intent. I went through the the testimony in the various committee hearings for House Bill 1378, and I read it from the beginning to end twice. And I kept searching for something that would suggest that the legislature. I'm going to get this out yet. this is the downside to have spent a month traveling the state speaking too much. My voice is about gone. But I was trying to find something in terms of the legislature anticipating that there would be unique circumstances in some instances, that there would be unforeseen events that would occur, which is clearly the case here. The Department of Defense, our military, has expressed their concern over dimming the towers at night for safety concerns, operational reasons, and so forth. And we have to respect the wishes of our military. They're the individuals that protect us and keep us safe. So I completely respect that. But nothing in the dialogue during the committee hearings alluded to the fact that there might be extenuating circumstances. Outside of the technical reasons and economical reasons for facilities permitted prior to June 5th, 2016. For those permitted after that date, after June 5th, 2016, it was must have ADLS that is approved by the FAA. And it doesn't give us the latitude to grant waivers or make exceptions at this point in time. I fully anticipate in the upcoming session, and I believe I know I had mentioned this prior, that the legislature will take this up and address this. So I don't believe this is a long-term delay in the whole scheme of things. The legislature will convene in approximately 10 months, and I anticipate that this will be addressed. And in consideration of landowners involved in this project, which is a significant concern for me, I do plan to encourage lawmakers to review this in the upcoming session and to make necessary changes to ensure protection of landowner rights and interests, and also not to inhibit a development, because that wasn't the intent of the Siting Act. It was put in place to ensure orderly development. But unfortunately, at least in short term, landowners will be impacted until a fix is put in place and the legislature changes the language to grant the commission the power to put an exemption or a waiver in place for unique circumstances, whether they're for safety concerns, whether they're for military operations, whatever it might be. But it just doesn't exist today. That's the bottom line. So I'm also not going to vote to approve the permit, but I think it is reasonable to as well to keep the application open, and I think ultimately this project will be built. But I don't want to get ahead of legislative action in terms of changing statute. And in my opinion, I think we clearly would, with the way paragraph 13 is written on the order.
Is there further discussion?
I want to make some comments on the ambiguity of the law. I see it differently. I think the company pointed out a number of contradictions in the law in their affidavits to us. Our staff and our advisory attorneys didn't see this the same. And I think by virtue of our disagreement here, I think it's clear that the law is ambiguous. And even, I will point out, even up until the middle of December, when we had this order on the agenda for consideration, we didn't even read the law as strictly as what you guys are saying it is today. So I just believe strongly in a fair, reasonable, and measured regulatory approach for all the industries that we regulate in our jurisdiction. And I think it's the order before us today is a fair, reasonable, and measured approach to this issue, and so I'll be supporting it.
Yeah, I want to counter one thing you said, because it sounds very broad-based in terms of staff and their position. Advocacy staff, legal counsel representing advocacy, clearly stated that the law is not ambiguous, the wording is not ambiguous, and they stressed even during the informal that it says must have. So that is a staff member. And then in discussions I've had with other staff, because I've talked about this extensively with a number of individuals, I don't think we can broad brush and say that across the board they feel one way or the other. I think you had some variance in terms of how this was interpreted and just citing advocacy, legal counsel in particular, they felt it was very black and white.
I'm sorry, I might have misspoke. I meant to point out that the staff, the advocacy and our advisory staff didn't see it the same. So that just to point out that I think the law is ambiguous.
Yeah, fair enough on staff seeing it different, but I still believe the law is not ambiguous. But of course frankly, I think this is an example of why it is good to have different opinions on these particular cases. And we don't always see things exactly the same way. I think ultimately it leads to a better outcome. I don't think this particular project, I think it's far from done. I think it's just going to take a few months longer than the company would like to see. But again, I'm speculating to some extent on future changes that they are in fact made, but I do anticipate they will be in the near future, frankly, in the whole scheme of things.
And I just want to add one more thing too regarding the lateness of how we view this law. Just speaking for myself, I didn't focus much on it until that late date, because from when it was implemented until around that late date, all of our applications have emphasized that they would be getting their ADLS system that was approved by the FAA. It was only when this one ran into these roadblocks late in the process that section of law really came into prominence in this case with me and started reviewing it and getting advice on it. And so, like last summer during the hearing, that really wasn't a factor. So that's why I never focused on this section until late.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, I'll do a roll call vote. Commissioner, Chairman Krosius?
Nay.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Aye.
Commissioner Chrisman?
Nay.
Motion fails.
Okay. Well, you guys have to listen to me even longer because I have four more items. Hopefully these will be quicker. I move the commission deem complete the combined application for a quarter certificate and route permit and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC Pump Station Additions, McKenzie and Dunn Counties Siting Application. Case number PU-20-018.
Second.
On January 10th of 2020, One Oak filed a combined application to amend Certificate of Corridor Compatibility 184 and Route Permit 196 for the addition of two pump stations to its existing Bear Creek NGL pipeline. Pump Station 1, called Stony Johnny Butte, will be located 7.5 miles southeast of Watford City in McKenzie County, and will consist of two 2,000 horsepower electrically driven motors and pumps. Pump Station 2 will be located about 18 miles northwest of Kildare, it's called Big Gulch, and that is in Don County, and that will consist of three 2,000 horsepower electrically driven motors and pumps all of these pumps and motors will be enclosed at both facilities. And this will allow for pipeline transportation of up to 80,000 total barrels of natural gas liquids per day. That's a 65,000 barrel per day increase with the addition of these pumps. We have are issuing here a notice of opportunity for hearing. Comments and requests for hearings must be received by April 3rd, 2020, and if deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine this matter without a hearing. This project proposes just the addition of these two pump stations to this existing line. It's about a 37-mile, 8-inch NGL line that was constructed in 2016. Currently transports about 15,000 barrels per day, and with these pumps, it can add 65,000 barrels per day. So obviously, that increase provides a significant increase in the export capacity of this line for the NGLs, and would be another critical component of the industry meeting gas capture targets. So we want to hear from any folks who have thoughts, ideas, concerns, or would like to see us have a hearing on this issue.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I'll just say that while it wouldn't be germane anyway, it's almost tempting to want to have a hearing to just find out who Stony Johnny was and how that person got a butte named after them.
Or the gulch. Is it dry gulch?
I chuckled over Stony Johnny, too.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Hopefully his dreams are being realized with a potential pump station being named after him.
It kind of sounds like a Western, Stony Johnson, Dry Gulch. And
yeah. So. All right. I move the Commission deem complete the combined application for a corridor certificate and route permit contingent on filing with the Commission at least 30 days prior to the hearing, all remaining GIS layers associated with the application maps, all available documents detailed in number 6 of the January 23, 2020 request for information letter, and all correspondence with the North Dakota Geological Survey, and issue notes of filing and public hearing in Liberty Midstream Solution, LLC, 8-inch residue gas pipeline Montrose Williams siting application, case number PU-20-022.
Second.
So we're scheduling a public hearing on this application for 9 a.m. Central Time, April 14th at Nesset Consulting Service in Tioga, North Dakota. Liberty Midstream Solutions filed an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility route permit for the location of approximately 4.7 miles of 8-inch residue gas pipeline in Montrose, Williams County, North Dakota. This is a relatively short gas pipeline. It will transport gas, residue gas from the County Line plant owned by Liberty near Tioga to the Alliance Tioga Lateral. And so anybody with concerns or input on this project should attend this public hearing April 14th in Tioga on this project.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. The next two items are somewhat related. So, Mr. Chairman, if there's no objection, I'd prefer to do JF7 first.
No objection.
Okay. So I move the Commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Belfouche Pipeline Company 6-inch Skunk Hill DPR Pipeline Conversion Project Siting Application Case Number PU-18-405.
Second.
On February 24th, Belfouche filed an amendment to its original application withdrawing its request for a certificate of corridor compatibility route permit for all but 4 miles of the 18-mile pipeline. 4 miles originates at the Marathon Dickinson Refinery and terminates at the Dakota Prairie Refinery. In addition, Belfouche proposes to construct a pig launcher at the Dickinson Station. Comments and requests for a hearing on this matter must be received by April 3rd of 2020. This project, and it kind of relates to the next application, it really provides a solution to a project that we had hearings on, a year and a half or so ago. And basically, Balfouche Pipeline was originally going to use this Skunk Hill to Dakota Prairie Refinery, a six-inch line to transport oil. Now they're going to just use the last 4 miles of it, and then they'll be forwarding plans for decommissioning the original 10 miles of that line. And then the next item on the agenda will relate to a new plan to connect another parallel line that the company owns at the Dickinson Station, to connect that line to the remaining 4 miles so that they can get the crude oil from point A to B as they originally planned. So this is a solution to that project, which they ultimately had a failure to be able to get a waiver from some of the landowners on the initial proposed project route. And so that's along the 10 miles that they're going to decommission and use this parallel line instead.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I will only say that I was surprised to think we even need to do a notice of opportunity for hearing. To me, we've already had a hearing on this. It is that slight difference of adding the pig launcher that wasn't discussed then, I think. But other than that, I find this more similar to, especially with wind farm sightings, sometimes we have the hearing and they withdraw certain turbine sites or something, and someone raises objections about, and then we approve the rest of it rather than starting over with a different layout. And so, to me, we've pretty much had the hearing, but if there's a need for the notice, I'm okay with that too.
Staff deemed that a notice would be the best way to proceed.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, and my last motion, I move the commission assess an application fee of $10,000, issue notice of opportunity for a hearing in Balfouche Pipeline Company 10-inch crude oil pipeline. Billings, Dunn, Stark, citing application case number PU-14-135.
Second.
So on February 21st of 2020, in July of 2014, the commission adopted a order and issued a certificate of corridor compatibility route permit for this pipeline. It's a 20-mile, 10-inch crude oil pipeline. In that pipeline, in that order, was included some language that required the company to have come to us for approval before orders were amended. That's inconsistent with the law that was passed after the fact that that allows companies to move forward with those kinds of changes without any action from us. So this motion really just is to remove that language, which is outdated, from the original order. So we'd be amending that order. So that's why we're just doing notice of opportunity for hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by April 3rd of 2020.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That finally concludes my portfolio.
I think you set a record for...
I should have looked at how long it took.
About an hour.
Dang it.
You did well.
Long time.
Well, thank you. Commissioner Christmas.
Well, I only have one item in my portfolio today, so I move the commission adopt the order on attorney's fees in Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC, Renewal 1, to permit NACC-1302, application case number RC-19-189, and Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC, Revision 9, to permit NACC-1302, application case number RC-19-190.
Second.
So, without going through the whole history, in May of 2019. Kaya Creek Mining Company filed an application for revision 9 and renewal number 1 to surface coal mining permit number NACC-1302. And I typically like to refer to companies like this as like Cuyo Creek Mining Company as Cuyo Creek, but this discussion also involves a creek called Cuyo Creek. So I'm going to refer to Cuyo Creek Mining Company as CCMC, so apologies for that. On October 26, Casey and Julie Voigt filed objections and requested an informal conference. The objections were regarding the following issues: access, dust, alluvial valley floors, omission of cultural resource sites, sediment buildup in Coyote Creek, CCMC's ability to reclaim the mine, and CCMC having no incentive to comply with the permit. On September 24th, the Voigts filed a motion to disqualify Wade Mann and the firm of Crowley Fleck. The administrative law judge then, Tim Dawson, denied that motion. The informal conference was held on October 8th, and the issues were discussed between the Voigts, CCMC, and commission staff. On October 21st, the commission adopted the ALJ's recommended order and approved the revision and the renewal subject to one special condition. Then on November 20th, the Voigts requested a formal hearing, citing issues presented during the informal conference, including reclamation and reclamation liability, dust control, water erosion, presence of an alluvial valley floor, and road access issues. On December 5th, CCMC filed a motion for attorney's fees, alleging that the Voigts participated in the proceeding in bad faith to harass or embarrass the permittees. And that is the issue of this order. On December 6, the Voigts again filed a motion to disqualify Wade Mann and the firm of Crowley Fleck. On December 10th, the ALJ at this point, Hope Hogan, issued an order denying the motion to disqualify again. The commission held the formal hearing on December 16th and 17th upon receipt of filings and responses subsequent to the hearing. The commission issued its findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order on February 7th of 2020 without addressing this issue of attorney fees. So pursuant to North Dakota Century Code, whenever an order is issued as a result of any administrative proceeding, a sum equal to the aggregate amount of all costs and expenses, including attorney fees, as determined by the Public Service Commission to have been reasonably incurred, may be assessed against any party as the commission deems proper. North Dakota's administrative code provides that fees may be awarded to a permittee when it is demonstrated that a person initiated a proceeding or participated in bad faith to harass or embarrass the permittee. We've heard arguments and docketed lengthy filings regarding the timing and details of a proper motion for attorney's fees. That information is included in the order, but I'm not going into it now because, to me, the following makes it unnecessary. This commission has the discretion to determine whether a claim is in bad faith to harass or embarrass the permittee, and upon such a determination, we have the discretion to award costs and expenses. CCMC asserts that the Voigts brought forth claims with jurisdictional and factual deficiencies. The PSC's agreement with this assertion can be observed in that February 7th findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order. However, while a number of the claims sidestepped previous jurisdictional conclusions and attempted to revisit well-litigated issues, some of the claims were not meritless, despite the eventual finding in CCMC's favor. So accordingly, this motion orders that CCMC's motion for attorney's fees is denied. But that being said, I do want to add that while the commission is not exercising its discretion, assuming we pass this motion, to grant attorney's fees in the present case, continued persistence in litigation of claims with little to no merit and repetitive litigation of issues do in fact evidence bad faith and harassment. CCMC is correct when it states that a conversation may occur outside of the administrative process, even with the participation of the Reclamation Division. I personally encourage communications and conversations outside of the administrative process, which are less costly and may even be more productive. However, a petition for an informal conference by an interested party that is adversely affected or by the PSC's request may also be necessary. But once a petition for a formal hearing is received, particularly for parties with counsel, the Commission will expect that such claims have a reasonable basis, be supported by sufficient allegations of fact and supporting evidence, and take care to avoid relitigation of issues. A number of the claims in this case appeared to be repetitious and provided little merit, and I will likely apply more scrutiny in the future in the event the Voights, having now received guidance in the Commission's findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, revisit these issues absent reasonable cause.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
All right. Concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, Commissioner Christman. Let's see, in terms of announcements, we do have a formal hearing on Friday. We will be in Williston, North Dakota this time. That's the One Oak Bakken Pipeline. It's case number PU-19-368, and that's a 16-inch natural gas, or NGL pipeline in Williams County. Our next regular commission meeting is on Wednesday, March 18th. That's at 10 a.m. here in the commission room at the Capitol. We also have an informal that same day on the 18th, and that is for Boomerang Wireless for a designated eligible carrier application, and that's PU-13-203. And then we also have one more at the end of March. We have a formal hearing in Newtown, and that is for the Robinson Lake Oil Conditioning siting application. That's in Montreal County, but we will be at Teddy's Residential Suites in Newtown on Monday, March 30th at 10 a.m. That concludes the announcements. We'll now take a brief recess and questions from the press, followed by the administrative portion of the meeting. This meeting is now in recess.